If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
On the night of May 3rd, 2008, 19-year-old Brandon Swanson was driving home from a party after finishing his first year of college. Just after midnight, he called his parents. He'd driven into a ditch, he said. He wasn't hurt, just frustrated, and he needed a ride. What followed was a 47-minute phone call, nearly an hour of confusion and missed turns. Brandon's parents tried desperately to find him in the dark rural backroads of southwestern Minnesota, but then the call went silent, and Brandon Swanson hasn't been seen since. Over the years, many theories have emerged about what happened to Brandon, but none have led to the teenager who was just trying to get home. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Brandon Swanson. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining me once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. Now, the story of Brandon Swanson is yet another story of a young man who disappears, leaving behind an empty car. A few of the others that we've covered on this show include Jason Landry, Bryce Laspisa, and Logan Schindelman. It's a strange commonality.
Yeah, and also frightening.
Yeah.
Like, all of these cases just leave me very unsettled.
Yes, I think that's a really good word to use, because a car is a pretty big clue.
Right.
You know? And to have these young men who leave this pretty big clue behind, sometimes after getting into an accident, sometimes not, and then...
with no evidence is leading anywhere.
Yeah.
And they're just gone.
You're right. It's deeply unsettling.
Yeah.
And so that's probably why these cases, you know, tend to stay prevalent in true crime communities. You know, like Brandon Swanson, this is one that we've had asked for before. It's one that's always kind of been on my radar. And it's one that does get a lot of attention on podcasts and TV shows and things like that, because it's just such it's just so weird when the car is there and the person isn't.
Yeah, and I'm sure it leads some crazy conspiracy theorists online to say aliens or whatever, you know? It's like, because, like, I mean, there's no answers.
Yeah.
There's not even a real theory to go on.
Yeah.
Which is why it is so unsettling.
It is. It is. But before we dive into Brandon's story, we want to thank our newest Patreon supporters, Jenny E. and Michaela M. Thank you so much.
Thank you so, so much.
Your support helps us keep the show going and helps keep these stories in the public eye. If you want to join them, you can head over to our Patreon and join at any level, starting at just $2 a month for ad-free episodes. I know a lot of you have been talking about the ads, but, you know, sorry, guys. It's been 5 years and I need to make some money. But ad-free episodes starting at just $2 a month over on Patreon, and you can get a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. So with all of that out of the way, let's talk about Brandon Swanson. Brandon Victor Swanson was born on January 30th, 1989, and grew up in the small town of Marshall, Minnesota. Brandon is the oldest child of Annette and Brian Swanson. His parents describe him as independent, intelligent, and curious. He loved learning and has a keen interest in science. In particular, he was fascinated by energy and electricity and dreamed of one day working in wind energy. He wore glasses, had a dry sense of humor, and was known to be thoughtful and kind. After graduating from Marshall High School in 2007, Brandon enrolled at Minnesota West Community and Technical College. He chose the Canby campus, which is only about 30 miles from his parents' house, so he commuted regularly for classes. And I also want to say that it's literally just a straight shot down the highway. Like, the Google map is just a line, and that comes into play later. He had just finished his first year in the school's wind turbine program and was making plans for the summer ahead. He was also excited because he was transferring to a four-year college, Iowa Western, which was about 250 miles away.
Oh, so that would have been a big change.
Yeah, definitely. So he would have been several hours away at that point and, you know, not commuting from home anymore, like really kind of taken off, you know?
Yeah, but smart move on his part to like...
Oh, yeah, get that first year out of the way?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, genius.
I'm sure that given that that was a technical school, it honed in on really what he wanted to do.
It did. And if I remember correctly from the research, I think he was able to get some sort of like certification type thing from that year that he did there. So he was going into his four-year college, like already really having a solid foundation.
Nice.
Yeah. By all accounts, Brandon wasn't the kind of kid who made reckless decisions. I mean, clearly, right? Like, he didn't drink heavily or party much. He was responsible and mature for his age. But May 13th, 2008 was the last day of classes, and he wanted to celebrate. He spent the evening hanging out with friends in both Canby and the nearby town of Lind. He reportedly had one drink at the first party and only had one or two at the second. Friends said he didn't appear drunk and had no trouble walking or talking. Just after midnight, Brandon got into his green Chevy Lumina and began the drive back to Marshall. It should have been a quick trip, less than 30 minutes, and it was basically the same drive he made every day to and from his classes.
The same straight shot.
Yeah. But on this night, Brandon never made it home. At 1:54 a.m., his parents were startled awake by the sound of their phone ringing. Brandon was on the other end. He told his parents that his car had gone off the road and he was stuck in a ditch. He wasn't hurt or anything. He was just annoyed and stranded. So he asked his parents to come get him. Now, Brandon wasn't exactly sure where he was because, again, he's like on a rural road. It's dark. Like,
yeah,
he can't exactly tell where he is.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know, by this fence.
Right.
Like,
rural road. There's no mile markers.
No, there was like nothing to orient him.
Yeah, it's Minnesota, so I'm assuming it's the geography was probably relatively flat.
Yeah.
There's no markers. There's no way to say I'm at this.
Yeah, I'm by the Hilton.
Rock.
Like, there's no Hilton
right.
that he can be by, you know?
Yeah.
So Brandon told his parents that he was on a rural road outside of Lind, about 10 miles from their house. So Brian and Annette got dressed, got in their car, and drove toward Lind, talking with Brandon on his cell phone the entire time. But what happened next has haunted them ever since. As they approached the area, they told Brandon to watch for their headlights. And they said to flash his lights so that they could spot him, and then they would do the same. So, like, they're flashing their headlights, and they could hear Brandon flashing his, you know, like the clicking
sound. Over the phone, yeah.
Yeah, over the phone, yeah. Right? So they could hear, like, the clicking sound that it made. So they knew he was doing it, but they didn't see anything. And Brandon couldn't see them either, and so, like, everybody was getting frustrated, basically, because they're like, you know, you should see us. I'm flashing my lights. I'm doing what you told me. I'm, you know, we're here. It's late. Everybody's tired and everybody's just cranky at this point, right? So at one point, they got into a little bit of a tiff and Brandon hung up the phone. So Brian and Annette continued to drive, but after a while, them just kind of driving around and not seeing anything, it became increasingly clear that Brandon wasn't where he thought he was.
Yeah, I was wondering whether, I mean, I was wondering whether we were getting there. Like,
yeah.
Clearly, this is, you said it's a straight shot.
Right.
He thinks he's on the same road that he was on to get to and from school, but clearly he's not, if that's what he told his parents to go down, and then they're driving down that road and they don't see him.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's, yeah, so he clearly, like I said, just wasn't where he thought he was, and they're like, okay, crap, now what? So meanwhile, Brandon, who thought he was near the town of Lind, decided to just leave his car and walked toward what he thought was the town. So he like saw lights in the distance and he thought that was the town. And he said, you know, I'm just going to walk there. So his mom called back. She apologized for like, you know, being short with him or whatever. And Brandon said that he was just going to go walk to Lind, go to his friend's house, and that they could just pick him up there.
That makes sense.
Right, because that would be easy to find.
Yeah.
You know? So they wouldn't just keep circling each other or whatever. So now that they had a plan, Brian decided to drive Annette back to the house so she could go to sleep. Because they're like, okay, Brandon's just going to go to this friend's house. This isn't a two-person job. And they're like 10 minutes from their own house at this point, right? So they're just like, yeah, let me just drive you back. You go to sleep. I'll go get Brandon. I'll take care of it. Don't worry. So he dropped her off and headed back toward Lind. And he called Brandon back at 2:23 a.m. For the next 47 minutes, Brandon and his father stayed on the line. Brandon described the gravel roads, the fences he passed, and even a couple of lights in the distance. And again, he didn't sound afraid, just irritated. So after all of this, the failed directions, the descriptions of his surroundings, at 3:10 a.m., Brandon said one more thing. Oh, shit. And then the call went dead.
Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming? Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably.
Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, avocado green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I mean, that sounds like a movie.
I know, right?
Yeah, like a terrifying movie.
Yeah. Brian didn't hear anything else, though, you know? Like, he didn't hear, like, Brandon fall or, like, a scuffle or somebody
or
else come up on him.
Or a gunshot or
yeah,
anything.
Right. Exactly. Nothing. He just heard Brandon walking, and then he said, oh, shit, the line went dead.
What the hell?
I know. So, of course, Brian immediately called him back. Brandon didn't answer. Over and over, he tried to call him back. The phone kept ringing, but it went to voicemail. Brian waited a few minutes, hoping he would call back, but he didn't. So, at this point, Brian's just hoping that Brandon had, like, just dropped the phone, you know, like maybe he tripped over something or whatever, dropped the phone.
Yeah.
Or had lost signal. Because again, they're on a rural road. I mean, who knows what the coverage is like?
Sure, yeah. Except the oh shit comment.
Yeah, when you lose signal, you don't usually know it's happening until it happens. So Brian continued driving around the area, calling out for him, retracing his route, and checking every gravel road and ditch. Because remember, Brandon had driven his car into a ditch. So he's like, at least, well, maybe I can find the car and, you know, have a starting point,
yeah,
at least. But still, he saw no sign of Brandon or his car. Now, I think at some point, I'm not exactly sure when, he went back home and got Annette, and, you know, she drove around with him looking for Brandon. So after driving around for hours without finding their son, panic truly began to set in. At 6:30 a.m., they contacted the police and reported Brandon missing. But the initial response wasn't what they expected. Though, if you've listened to enough episodes of this show, it won't surprise you. When Brian and Annette Swanson called the Lyon County Sheriff's Department at 6:30 a.m. on May 14th to report Brandon missing, They weren't met with concern or offers to launch a search party. Instead, they were met with indifference. Remember, Brandon was 19 at the time, so he was legally an adult. Despite the fact that he had crashed his car prior to his disappearance, walked away, and then stopped answering his phone after saying, oh shit.
Yes. What the hell? This is not like, this is not a young adult that walked out. Like, there are the circumstances around this clearly point to something happened.
Yeah, something not good. Like, there's no like good scenario that starts off that way,
yeah,
you know?
It's not like he ran away.
Yeah.
Or was just out partying. Like,
exactly.
Whoa.
Yeah, but police weren't concerned. To them, this sounded like a young man who would likely turn up soon. But Brandon's parents knew better. They knew their son, and they had spent nearly an hour on the phone with him. They knew he was disoriented, stranded, and walking through an unfamiliar rural area in the dark, and they were certain that something was terribly wrong. And now, I do want to say, when I say he was disoriented, I don't mean that, like, the conversation made him seem disoriented. Like, he was perfectly lucid on the phone. Because one of the things that pops up was, you know, was he drunk? Was he on drugs? Et cetera, et cetera. And while we can't know for sure if he was or wasn't, like, there's no indication of that on the phone.
Plus, this is, what, probably an hour after he left the party?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I understand that you could be drunk an hour after leaving a party or still high on something or whatever, but, yeah. Like, I mean, you're starting to come down at that point.
Exactly. You know? And, like, but, yeah, he was on the phone with his parents the entire time. They said he sounded completely normal. He didn't sound confused or anything. The only reason why I say he was disoriented is because he clearly wasn't where he thought he was.
He just didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, thankfully, later that morning, after the Swansons had called all of Brandon's friends and anyone else they could think of, the police did agree that the situation was perhaps concerning. Officers began looking into Brandon's last known location. They started by searching the area near Lind, where Brandon had said he was. But nothing turned up. They couldn't find his car, they didn't find any footprints or, you know, any other clues. It wasn't until later that day that police located Brandon's green Chevy Lumina, but it wasn't anywhere near Lind. Investigators had managed to track Brandon's cell phone to a tower northwest of Marshall. That's when they found the car in a ditch off a gravel road near the town of Taunton, Minnesota, nearly 25 miles northwest of where Brandon said he was. And this discovery changed everything. It is a little unclear. Okay. I did say, like, he was just on this straight shot from, like, where his classes are to his home in Marshall. But it's a little confusing because Canby is north of Marshall, where his home was. So going from Canby to Marshall literally was just a straight shot south on the highway. Lind was a town that was southwest of Marshall. Basically, Canby to
like
Marshall to Lind. Yeah, it's a backwards L.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've actually pulled all of this on a map so that I can show you so you can like get a sense of kind of what is going on because none of it really makes any sense. Basically, if you go on, what is that, 68 from Marshall and you go to the town of Ghent, that's where you can kind of split off and go get off of 68 and go to Lind. Maybe the last place he was at was Lind. He made a left on the highway instead of a right. So maybe instead of heading home toward Marshall, he was just on autopilot and started heading back toward Canby instead, but was thinking he was heading toward Marshall. So maybe that was it. So maybe he made a left onto 68 instead of a right.
I mean, that would make sense. And that would explain why he was confused.
I'm sure there are plenty of locals who are like, no, he went, you know, to Canby first and Lynn second. But like that information isn't really available in a lot of the sources that I used for this. I mean, they just said that, you know, he was out partying and, you know, whatever.
And these were the two towns where
the
parties were.
But they
were,
didn't really like break it down.
Which was
like that.
First, which was second.
Right.
Where did he actually leave from? Right. Well, somebody's got to know.
Well, yeah, exactly. So in any case, but that's the thing. So his car is found near Taunton, which is between Canby and Marshall.
And he started walking. I wonder whether he was walking towards the town of Taunton. or if he started, or if he was like somewhere walking closer to Mineota, which is another town on 68.
Right, right.
But regardless, this is all very rural area.
It's all very rural, and whatever he saw in the distance was not land.
Right. And it looks like everything in between is just farmland.
It is. And so one theory was that, like, apparently there was a grain silo near where his car was found that had a red light on top of it. And they're like, well, maybe he thought that was part of a town. Like, that was a light he could have seen from his car.
Sure.
But, you know, they don't know.
My first thought is, like, dark road, fast car.
Mm-hmm.
He's walking on the side of the road. Somebody hits him, right?
But yeah.
That wouldn't explain why his cell phone just went dead and his dad didn't hear anything.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you would have heard something if
right.
He got hit by a car when he was on the phone.
Yeah. And then I was thinking, okay, it's Minnesota, a bear, a black bear, sure. A grizzly bear, but same thing. Like,
you would have heard
the grizzly
else.
Bear doesn't hang up the phone and then maul somebody.
Right.
So, like, what the fuck?
I don't know.
And same thing, like, if he had stumbled across an overprotective farmer. Maybe he wasn't actually on 68. He was on some back road.
Yeah, and that's definitely possible, too, because he was. So where they've searched, a lot of it that they wanted to search and in some cases have been able to search, in some cases have not been able to search, was private farmland.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. But
yeah.
Again, same thing. You don't do, oh, shit, and the phone goes dead and then shoot somebody.
Yeah.
Who's trespassing on your property. Like,
yeah, or you would hear somebody yelling, too.
Yes.
You'd be like, hey, who the hell are you? Like, what are you doing on my property?
Right.
Like, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
There's something else you would hear.
Yes, that's what's baffling.
Yes.
And also terrifying.
Yes. So Brandon had clearly been confused about his location. We know that for sure. Possibly due to the pitch black roads or a wrong turn taken after leaving the party, like we thought. But more importantly, his parents had been searching in the completely wrong area all night.
Right.
Once the car was located, the search for Brandon really began in earnest. I mean, obviously, his parents were very much searching for him before, but in the wrong place. Now, the car itself showed no signs of a struggle or of anything violent happening, other than it being driven into a ditch. And it wasn't even, like, driven hard, like it wasn't like crashed into a ditch.
He just couldn't get out of it.
Yeah. His wheel, like at least one or two, or, you know, I don't know how many wheels, but they were suspended. So he just like couldn't get traction
right.
To get the car out. So none of that was surprising though, because again, Brandon seemed fine on the phone. He didn't say that he had been injured. Like he didn't say it was a bad accident. Like he wasn't concerned about his car other than the fact that he couldn't drive it at that moment.
Right. And then he walked for 47
minutes. 47 minutes and was fine. I mean, longer than that because they got into the argument and
was
hung
the
up.
Was the argument while he was walking or
no,
was
no,
that
it was
beforehand?
Before. It was yeah. Like while he was still at his car, they got into the argument, they hung up. And that's when Brandon decided just like walk toward Lynn to his friend's house. So he started walking before his mom called him back and apologized. And then the 47 minutes was even after that, because I think it was after Brian dropped a net off that he called him back. So like he was walking and doing great for over an hour.
So depending on how fast he walked, he could have been 5 miles away from his car.
Yeah, sure.
So whatever happened to him, obviously, did not happen at the car, which would lead to no evidence at the car.
Exactly.
At least in this case, we have that answer.
Right.
But then the last thing said on the phone makes it even more baffling.
Yeah.
And
especially
more
because
terrifying.
It happened over an hour later. So law enforcement brought in tracking dogs from the Minnesota Search and Rescue Dog Association. The central that they picked up indicated that Brandon had walked along the gravel road north of where his car was found, then turned west along another field road. Eventually, the trail veered into an open field, which I don't know why he would have gone into an open field, and then abruptly ended at the edge of the Yellow Medicine River. Search teams feared the worst. Over the next several days, hundreds of volunteers and multiple agencies combed the area. They searched the river using boats and sonar. They scoured the fields and surrounding farmland on foot and with ATVs. They had helicopters search by air, Cadaver dogs were brought in, but nobody turned up anything.
And you said the police were able to search the farmland adjacent to where his scent was.
I did read in an article that was actually fairly recent, I believe 2023, that said that over the years, they have had trouble in their searches getting permission to search some of the farmland in the area that they've been wanting to search. And he said that, you know, some eventually agreed, but that it was still a problem for some. So they were able to search some of the farmland, not all of the farmland.
Interesting.
Now, the river, of course, though, was much more of a concern than the farmland at that point. Not only had his scent stopped there, but at the time of his disappearance, the river was running particularly fast and high. Though some parts of the river were shallow, others were up to 15 feet deep. However, after multiple searches and time passed, authorities ruled out the Yellow Medicine River because they believed that his body would have made it downriver and would have eventually been found. Another reason they don't believe he fell into the river when he said, oh shit, on the phone was because police were able to determine that his phone was working well into the next day.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Now, he could have dropped the phone on a riverbank as he stumbled. You know, like he fell into the river, but then his phone didn't make it into the water.
But again, like, that doesn't jive with what his dad heard.
No.
Like, you don't, it's not, oh shit, as I'm falling, and then the phone goes dead and it rolls down the embankment.
Yeah.
Like, you would hear things.
Yeah, you would hear the phone dropping.
It doesn't just go dead.
Right.
Unless it was in the river with him.
But it wasn't because it was working the next day.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't jive with what we know.
No, it's all so scary. The phone records also confirmed that Brandon had been on the phone until his final oh shit moment and that the call had not dropped due to a lack of signal. It had ended abruptly. Whether the phone died, was dropped, or destroyed remains unknown.
I mean, the only thing that I can think of at this point is he's walking down that road, comes across somebody that points a gun in his face, takes his phone, hits the end call button.
Yeah.
Then forces him to walk through that field
right
to the river. And that would explain why the call ended abruptly, but you didn't hear anything.
Yeah.
And then who knows what that person did with his phone the next day.
Right.
But that's why it was still
working. Yeah.
That's the only thing that would explain it. However, that is also completely fucking crazy.
Exactly.
Because this clearly was just like he was just walking down a road, and this is 3 a.m.
Yeah.
At this point.
Like the middle of the night.
Yeah, like who's out in their farm field at 3 a.m.
Looking to like kidnap a teenager.
Yeah, like this is all crazy. That's just the only thing that I can think of that
right.
makes sense given the evidence.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm with you. As the investigation went on, a few more clues were found. In 2010, a new search led them to another body of water, Mud Creek. This is also in the vicinity of where Brandon's car was found, and bloodhounds led searchers there in March of that year. Cadaver dogs also reportedly indicated in the area not only in 2010, but also during another search that was conducted in 2013. Jeff Hassey was a professional search manager who assisted on the case in the first few years and wrote a blog called The Search for Brandon Swanson. He was confident that Brandon's remains would be found in the Mud Creek area, but after years of extensive searches, nothing has turned up. Over the years, there have been no shortage of theories that have popped up about what happened to Brandon Swanson.
I mean, I just postulated one right now.
Exactly. Now, one of the earliest and most persistent theories is that Brandon accidentally fell into the Yellow Medicine River and drowned.
Right. But again, his dad didn't hear anything that would have sounded like a phone falling or anything. It's just, oh shit, and then dead.
Right. But the tracking dogs led searchers right to the river's edge, and the abrupt end to the scent trail does seem to support that theory. However, as we've already mentioned, the river was thoroughly searched multiple times with boats, divers, sonar, and cadaver dogs. Nothing was found. Search experts have since stated that if Brandon had drowned in the river, it's likely that his body would have surfaced or been discovered nearby. Now, the water level was a little higher than usual on the weekend of his disappearance, and while the current was strong, it wasn't enough to carry a body far without some evidence being left behind. Plus, by the time a lot of these searches were taking place, the water level had dropped, which would have made it easier to find Brandon. Now, that doesn't mean that this theory has been ruled out completely. It is possible that Brandon fell in, was swept downstream, and that decomposition and wildlife activity eventually destroyed or dispersed his remains. Still, many people, including his family, have doubts about this, mainly because no clothing or other items have turned up.
Right. And also, didn't you say the search of the river, they were using sonar technology?
Yeah.
Like
everything available to them at the time.
Right. And this is a day after he went missing.
Yeah, they did it immediately. Like, and
there's
then
decomp. There's no,
exactly.
There's no animals disturbing remains.
Yeah.
His body would have been intact at that point.
Right.
Even if it had gotten caught on some debris underneath the water that was pinning his body down,
yeah.
Like they would have seen that on sonar.
And he was wearing clothes, you
right.
know, like he had a lot of clothes on. He wasn't in just a bathing suit, for instance. Like this isn't a drowning that happened while he was swimming. Like he was wearing a full outfit.
Right.
And nothing was ever found. And yeah, like there were the immediate searches done, but then searches have been done over the years as well. Now, I do want to mention that because Brandon disappeared near the borders of several different police jurisdictions, multiple local agencies assisted in his search. Lincoln County Sheriff Jack Visecki says that he personally walked the 2 miles of the riverbank every day for 30 days after Brandon's disappearance.
Must not be a whole lot going on in Lincoln County.
No, but, you know, again, every day, 30 days. And you see nothing? That tells me he's not there.
I mean, there just doesn't seem to be any evidence that that's where he ended up.
Exactly. Other than, again, you know, the dogs.
Yeah. Obviously, that's the primary place to search. But they searched and searched and researched.
Yeah.
And it doesn't appear that that's where he ended up.
Right. Another possibility is that Brandon, walking in the dark along unfamiliar terrain, may have tripped and fallen into a hidden ditch, culvert, or even an abandoned well.
But again, like, you don't say, oh shit, and then your phone dies if that happens. Like, his father would have heard something. Even if you fall, you're not hitting the end call button.
Right. You know what's so frustrating about this? If this happened now and his phone was working the next day instead of 2008, they would have found his phone because they could have just used GPS to pinpoint exactly where the phone is.
Yeah.
But in 2008, all you could do was cell tower
pings. Triangulation.
Exactly. Yeah. And that can give you general area.
Yeah. And if there's only one cell phone tower, you can't even do triangulation
exactly
to get it.
So what you have is you have like a radius around the tower of where it can be, and you can't even in a lot of cases tell which direction. Like you have your tower and you can say this phone is within 5 miles of the tower,
but it's within 5 miles in any direction of that tower.
Yeah, and sometimes they can narrow it down into like a pie graph almost,
mm-hmm.
where you can say it's like maybe in the southwest quadrant of the tower or maybe just the western half of like the radius or whatever. But that's not all the time that you can do that. And even then, it's a large area.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, spoiler, they haven't found his phone ever. But if this were to happen now, and his phone turns off or whatever and remains working until the next day,
they would have had GPS technology.
They would know exactly. Yeah. So if it's in the bottom of a well or a culvert or whatever,
they would have found it.
They would have found it.
Yeah.
And it's just so heartbreaking. Now, so getting back to the whole like falling into a ditch or a culvert, the area where he was last believed to be is rural and filled with hazards. There are barbed wire fences, overgrown brush, and unmapped depressions. In the years following his disappearance, volunteers and authorities searched dozens of wells and drainage areas within a several mile radius of his last known location. Some were filled in and others were inaccessible, but no clues were found. Now, this theory does, though, that he like fell into something, right? It does remain plausible, especially if Brandon became disoriented, was actually injured without realizing it, or became trapped somewhere that was missed during the initial searches. Another theory is that Brandon suffered from a medical emergency and or died of exposure. Given that Brandon disappeared on a chilly spring night in rural Minnesota, some believe that he may have succumbed to the elements. It was cold, likely in the 40s, and if he had fallen, become injured, or gone into shock, he may have died of hypothermia. So there is a misconception, and we've talked about this in other cases before too. It doesn't necessarily have to be below freezing for you to die of hypothermia.
Yes, and that certainly is plausible, but I keep going back to the abruptness of the call being dropped.
This theory also, while possible, raises the same question as the others. Where is he?
Right.
Because in this theory, he's not hidden, right? He would have just like dropped dead in the middle of a field, presumably. And his body would have likely been discovered by now. The fact that not a single item of his clothing or belongings has ever turned up makes this theory a little bit harder to accept. Then, of course, getting back to your theory, there's foul play. Though there is no evidence of a struggle or indication that Brandon encountered another person that night, foul play can't be completely ruled out.
Right.
Some people believe it's possible that Brandon, while walking along the road or through a field, like you said, may have crossed paths with someone, perhaps a stranger, a local resident, or even someone intentionally patrolling private land who reacted violently. So again, it's a possibility.
It's highly unlikely.
Yeah, but everything's highly unlikely, you know?
It's the only thing in my mind that would make sense as to why the phone call was dropped so abruptly.
Yeah.
And it was met with, oh shit, because he was walking along. Suddenly there's somebody with a gun in his face. Oh shit. And he grabs the phone and hangs the phone up.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that makes sense in my mind. Everything else, all these other theories, yes, very plausible. It just doesn't fit with what little evidence we have.
Because it's 2008 that we're talking about, right?
Right.
It's like if we're talking about this and it happened a week ago, I would say all of those theories are still highly probable. You know, I would say, yeah, he's probably in the river. He's probably in the creek. You know, he's probably in one of those two places and he'll turn up.
Right.
But it's 2025, the anniversary of his disappearance just passed a few weeks before this is aired, and nothing. We've had nothing. And, you know, the thing about the foul play, too, is, of course, there are obviously no witnesses, no surveillance cameras,
yep.
Like nothing that you can look to prove or disprove it, really.
Yeah. And even if we're going that route, what would have been the point?
Exactly.
Like, so this obviously is not premeditated.
Yeah.
Right? It can't be.
No, because he didn't know where he was. How
right.
the hell could anybody else?
So then it's like, what would have been the point
yeah.
of something like that?
Just randomly kidnapping some kid and like killing him and hiding his body? Like,
because,
why?
Because he was wandering onto your property? I mean, look, I mean,
people are crazy.
People
but, like,
are crazy, but that seems...
That's a little... Yeah.
Really far out there.
Yeah.
But that does potentially jive with the fact that some of the residents weren't letting cops onto their property.
I mean, maybe.
I don't know. Or maybe it's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, maybe they just don't like cops. I don't know. So like the foul play theory, like anything else is possible, but most investigators believe that it's less likely than an accident or misadventure. In the end, the truth of what happened to Brandon Swanson may lie somewhere between these theories or in something that no one has considered yet. But the lack of evidence, despite massive search efforts, continues to frustrate everyone involved. His final words on the phone, oh shit, indicate that something happened in that moment.
He saw something.
Yeah, and it was something sudden and unexpected. But what?
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
In the wake of Brandon's disappearance, his parents, Annette and Brian Swanson, were left not only with the grief and confusion, but with a deep sense of frustration. This is the worst thing that can happen to a parent, and this already horrible situation was made worse by how slowly things got moving when they initially reported him missing. They called the police at 6:30 a.m. just 4 hours after the call with Brandon went silent. But initially, the officers told them that there was nothing to be alarmed about. Brandon was 19, after all. He was an adult. They were told that as an adult, he had the right to go missing. And Annette did say that in an interview. She said that one detective, like, legitimately said those words to her.
There is no right to go missing.
I mean, there is, technically, but this is not that situation. And it's very obviously not that situation. And I just can't imagine how devastating that must have been for her to hear. You know, for the people who you went to for help in the worst moment of your entire life said, well, he has a right to go missing. Maybe he's mad. Maybe he's blowing off steam. If you've listened to this show long enough, you know that that's a line that so many families hear when their loved one disappears. And it's one of the most dangerous assumptions that law enforcement can make. For Annette and Brian, that delay in urgency stuck with them. What if the search had started earlier? Could they have found Brandon's trail before it disappeared? Could they have rescued him? There's no way to know, but they were determined that no other family would have to endure that same helplessness. Just a year after Brandon went missing, the Swansons began advocating for change. They worked with Minnesota lawmakers to draft new legislation that would change how law enforcement responds to reports of missing adults. In 2009, Brandon's law was passed unanimously by the Minnesota State Legislature. Under Brandon's law, law enforcement agencies are required to take missing persons reports immediately, regardless of the missing person's age.
Good.
If the missing adult is believed to be in danger, authorities must initiate a search promptly. Agencies are required to enter missing adult cases into national databases without delay. And there is no waiting period to report someone missing, and departments cannot dismiss a report based on assumptions about adult behavior.
Good.
And that last one is key because Brandon was a responsible college student when he went missing, and his case still wasn't acted on with a sense of urgency. What if he had been involved with drugs or had made other unsavory life choices?
Right. Then the assumption would have been just that.
Yeah.
Like, well, he made his choice to get involved with drugs.
Yeah, we don't need to worry about it.
He's probably out on a bender. He'll sober up and whatever.
And what happens is that those cases are often all but ignored because of the assumptions made by law enforcement.
Incidentally, those cases in particular, if investigated promptly, could lead to reduced amounts of human trafficking.
Absolutely.
I have said this before. There is no training in law enforcement on missing persons cases.
Right.
Maybe there is in small instances here and there, but by and large, it's generally ignored in the law enforcement community.
Yeah, it is. And again, all these assumptions are constantly made.
Right.
Oh, it's a college student. They're probably just out partying. Oh, this person's on drugs. Like, they're probably just off doing drugs. Like, whatever it is, these assumptions are made and it leads to these cases going cold and these people not being found.
Right. And the law enforcement perspective of, you know, oh, it's wasting resources. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, that's your job. You're not wasting resources by investigating something like that, by doing any sort of investigation.
Yeah.
Other than kind of what you're blowing off the parents or the family members that are reporting them missing.
Right.
Because nobody deserves to go missing, no matter what they were doing in the days, months, hours, whatever, leading up to them going missing. They don't deserve to go missing.
And if they're an adult and they go missing, if you do a little bit of investigation and you find them and they say, yeah, I walked out on my family. Well, then guess what? The family has the answer. Then we don't have a Hoagie Hoagland situation.
Yeah. Brandon's law went into effect on July 1st, 2009, and it has since served as a model for legislation in other states. It's not just a law, it's a statement. All missing persons matter, and time is always critical. For Annette and Brian, the law has been one of the few concrete outcomes in a case with no resolution, and it's become their son's legacy. While nothing can ever ease the pain of all of the unanswered questions and not having their beloved son with them, it's at least a way of ensuring that his story protects others, even as his own remains painfully unresolved. The Swansons have also continued to speak publicly about Brandon's case, hoping to keep it in the spotlight. In 2015, Brandon's story was featured in an episode of Disappeared on Investigation Discovery. In 2023, the nonprofit organization, the Aware Foundation, spotlighted the case once again, encouraging renewed attention and tips. Oh, and by the way, like, there are still tips on this case to this day. And, you know, not a ton, maybe a couple a year, but they're still investigated and looked after because, again, this bothers the investigators now as much as it bothers everyone else. Each year on May 14th, the Swansons mark the anniversary of the day their son vanished. They share updates. They thank volunteers. They ask once more for help. Brandon's face still appears on missing persons flyers across the country. His case is still open and his family is still waiting. It's been more than 15 years since Brandon Swanson vanished from the side of a gravel road in rural Minnesota. Brandon's case stands out not just because of the mystery, but because of how ordinary it all seemed. He was just driving home after a small celebration on a road he had traveled countless times before. There were no red flags. There were no warning signs. And yet Brandon disappeared without a trace. Brian and Annette Swanson have endured every parent's worst nightmare, and they continue to carry the weight of not knowing. But even in that pain, they built something lasting. Brandon's law, awareness, and a community of people who still care and who still search. Brandon Swanson has been missing from Marshall, Minnesota since May 14, 2008. At the time of his disappearance, he was 5'6" tall and weighed approximately 120 pounds. He has brown hair and blue eyes, and he wore glasses. Brandon was 19 when he went missing. He would be 36 today. If you have any information about the disappearance of Brandon Swanson, please contact the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office at 507-694-1664, or the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, who's now the lead agency on the case, at 877-996-6222. You can remain anonymous. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows you want the best for dad. This Father's Day, help him take on any project with big deals on DeWalt. Right now, get a free XR 8 amp hour battery when you buy select DeWalt tools. That's not all. Get up to two free select tools when you buy a select DeWalt 20 volt max battery kit. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a work load is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.